This morning, Erica Harrell is joining us. She's a Republican candidate for Attorney General. It's so good to get a chance to talk to you again. How have you been, ma'am? Good?
I've been terrific. It's great to be back again.
You know, when it comes to Illinois politics, they play rough in this state, don't they?
They do. Politics in Illinois is not for the faint of heart. You have to have a lot of stamina and you have to have thick skin.
I was getting ready to say, if you didn't say thick skin, I was going to.
Right.
And the reason why is because, you know, in this country, we've become increasingly, well, of course, the term is polarized. But I don't think it's probably any clearer than it is in Illinois that there are very different views of how things should be done. And one of the areas in which this would count, I think, in that statement, I would back it up, is how attorney generals address corruption.
Absolutely.
And also, I see an increasing number bouncing between 17 and 19 attorney generals that I now seem to think are leaders in the resist movement when it comes to Donald Trump.
Absolutely. One of the choices that voters will have in the general election is what do they think the Illinois attorney's role should be. I believe the role is not to focus on it as a political platform, but to use it as a legal platform to address the interests of Illinoisans. And that's why tackling public corruption is one of my number one priorities.
I mean, can the attorney general really do something to change this around without support outside of the office? I mean, can you go out and be, because I think people have an expectation, and I think this all the stuff out of D.C. when it comes to the FISA memos and things like that,
Right. The
people have become increasingly suspicious.
That's very true, and I'm glad you brought up. There are certain limitations on the powers that the General Assembly is currently given the Attorney General, and I will be advocating for the General Assembly to give additional powers to the Attorney General, such as the ability to issue more subpoenas and the ability to convene statewide grand juries. But even if the General Assembly gives no additional powers, there's still statutory authority that the Attorney General has to address evidence of misconduct, and I would be proactive in using that. There's also the Public Access Bureau that's part of the Attorney General's office, and through that, you can mandate compliance with the Open Meetings Act and FOIA. That's important because those acts really do entitle the public to transparency and accountability in government. And so I would also work on that bureau as well because that empowers the media, citizens, and watchdog groups to demand more accountability from their government. And that's one way of preventing corruption.
You know, when it comes to accountability, and I've had this conversation with a number of candidates and office holders about opioid addiction in Illinois. They just had a big program with law enforcement last night at John A. Logan College to help train law enforcement
right.
And use the Narcan in particular. And, of course, that's a heroin connotation there as well. But what I find interesting, Erica Harrell's joining us this morning, Republican candidate for Attorney General in Illinois, is that very often when I have candidates and officials on, they talk about how people acquire these drugs from grandma's medicine cabinet or some euphemism like that. But when you look at the numbers that it takes to support the number of people who are on opioids, the pills we're talking about now, that these are not coming from grandma's cabinet. Somehow we got a big leak coming on. The math doesn't work for grandma's cabinet. Grandma's got the biggest cabinet ever, right? What
and
can we do?
We can't be blind to that because there have been various reports, including a explosive 60 Minutes report where they looked at some distributors sending just vast amounts into communities and paying no attention to the fact that there's no plausible way that many citizens could possibly need that volume. And so there are a lot of things that we need to be doing to address supply. One is trying to work with doctors to have them prescribe smaller amounts. If you really only need 5 to 10 pills, there's no reason why you should get 90 with automatic refills. And so I think we need to focus on things like that. And to focus on grandma's medicine cabinet, I think, is to turn a blind eye to a real problem.
A big real problem, you know. And you and I think we probably agree that money, this is about money.
It is about money, and it's about regulation, and it's about accountability. And one of the things I've been doing is meeting with state attorneys throughout the state to see what best practices have been most effective in stemming the epidemic tide within their particular counties. Some counties are working on filing various lawsuits. Others are working on trying to provide more treatment options. There are statewide task forces. And I think the role of the Illinois Attorney General is to make sure that we're not duplicating efforts, not wasting resources, and trying to have a three-pronged approach where we're looking at prevention, treatment, and holding people accountable who are flooding our communities with massive amounts of product without any regard for whether people could actually need that.
Another issue that is a big one in Southern Illinois, and that is, and I've had the conversation with the governor on this show who has said Illinois is not a sanctuary state. There are other people that would quite generously disapprove. The Attorney General's role, the President of the United States, of course, has got Department of Justice and ICE agents that are really working in California right now, deporting people, sanctuary city status, sanctuary state status. Where do you fall in this debate?
Well, in this debate, I would fall in the, on the side of calling on the federal government to do their job to pass the type of reform to address this issue, because the federal government's lack of action has really placed states, cities, municipalities in a position of trying to manage a problem, but without having the jurisdictional tools and power to actually address it. And in terms of what we should be doing with it, with our state, if you're the Attorney General, you enforce the law, you make sure that constitutional protections are upheld, but you are calling on the federal government to do its job.
All right. Now, this is kind of pie-in-the-sky stuff. If you win, you win the Republican, all right? You win the Republican nomination in March 20th.
Yes.
All right? And you're running against whichever the Democrat from a rather large field there.
Yeah, but, there are eight still. So this,
eight?
This is a great cast of characters on both sides.
All right, you know, is Drury in today or out today? I mean, that's, you know, there's a bunch of people waiting around
for
ballots.
Today.
In today. Okay, good. What's the difference between you and Lisa Madigan? We don't know which of these Democratic candidates, so I don't feel that that's a fair comparison. But if you take the history of Lisa Madigan as the Attorney General's office and look at your particular stance and where you lie in the Republican spectrum, what's the difference between you and Lisa Madigan, and where do you start?
Biggest difference is public corruption. And when I announced my candidacy, I highlighted the specific cases where she failed to use the office's authority to address public corruption. And I identified the specific statutory authority that would have given her power to be willing to take action. And exactly 1 month from the date that I announced my candidacy, she announced she was no longer seeking re-election. And I made it very clear that I plan to highlight that issue and the way in which her office had not been aggressive enough in addressing this issue.
Is public corruption? I mean, there's other areas, right?
There's other areas. That's certainly the biggest contrast that would be between the current Attorney General and me. Other areas, she's focused primarily on consumer protection. And I think that it's important to address consumer protection, but there are many other issues that do deserve our attention. She has not been as active in the fight against the opioid epidemic. Another area that I would emphasize is workers' compensation reform. One of the things that we all know is happening within our state is we're losing too many jobs. And part of the problem is that our laws put our businesses and companies who want to work here at a competitive disadvantage as it relates to the workers' compensation system. So I would emphasize that, because I think each constitutional officer needs to use the tools within their toolkit to be able to do things to attract businesses to stay in our states and to expand and create jobs.
Are you going to be in Southern Illinois anytime soon? Get get a chance to meet you and talk to you and ask questions?
Absolutely. I was in Williamson County, I think it was last weekend, for a wonderful event sponsored by the Williamson County Republicans. I'm going to be in St. Clair County, I believe, within the next week, and Saline County. I have made it a priority to be in Central and Southern Illinois because I'm from Central Illinois, and I know how often people feel overlooked within the political process. And so I want to be the Attorney General for everyone, and so I will absolutely continue to make regular visits there.
Does it bother you that when a lot of times when you look at a headline with your name, it's Erica Harold, Miss America 2003, as opposed to Miss Erica Harold, Harvard law graduate, who's running for Attorney General? And the subtext there is the attempt to minimize you because you participated in beauty contests?
I think sometimes when the headlines use it is an attempt to minimize the pageant experience. But what I always emphasize for people is I entered that pageant because I'd been accepted to Harvard Law School, didn't have the money of paying for it, and so I told my parents, I'm going to try to become Miss America this year as a way of paying for Harvard Law School. And it worked, and I was able to graduate completely debt-free from Harvard Law School in 2007. And being Miss America also gave me an incredible platform to work with the military and the USO and to support members of the military and their families, and to be an advocate on issues of preventing bullying within schools. I was able to become a national leader in changing the way we view bullying and calling upon schools and legislators to require that students are protected from bullying within schools. So regardless of why people include it in the headline, it's important to me to be able to show how it enabled me to pay for school and gave me a national platform to become a leader.
Yeah, where they want to take a positive and turn it into a negative, you want to keep a positive, and then expand on the experience and share what it did for you financially. And I think that when you look at people say, well, I graduated Harvard without any student debt, that says something about your fiscal nature.
It absolutely says something about my fiscal nature. I was not looking to go into debt, but I was also willing to work really hard to try to make it happen and to find an innovative and creative way of addressing what seemed to be an obstacle. And I think that creativity and innovation is what I'd like to bring to the Attorney General's office, because Illinois should be on the forefront of addressing some of these issues. One of the issues that I also would like to highlight is the area of criminal justice reform and using mental health courts and drug courts more, because we are spending a lot of money on failed policies that are bringing poor solutions for our communities. And for the past 11 years, I've been on the board of directors of the group that does prison ministry and advocates for bipartisan criminal justice reform. And I think we can be making much better use of tools like those courts to give people who show potential for rehabilitation the opportunity to, and tools to do so.
Well, I'm going long this morning, but I want to drop one thing in your ear on this subject. I've met with prison educators, people who work in the prisons, and it seems to be the common denominator when you look at recidivism and you look at who's sitting there in those classes in a prison is education. The lack of education seems to have a profound connection to our prison population.
Absolutely. When you look at the trend in terms of people who are incarcerated, you see a lot of common factors. And I'm glad you highlighted the fact that if we're going to address these issues, we do want to look at educational opportunities and economic factors as well, because if we are going to address long-term some of our recidivism issues, we have to be willing to make some investments in giving people tools to have more opportunities for their lives.